Open our lips, O Lord, that our mouths might proclaim your praise. Amen. I will start with an apology. My sinuses act up at this time of year, which gets to my throat, and so I'm sorry if it's a little gravelly this morning. Those of you in the back, if it gets too low, just gently do that, and I'll know that I need to get a little closer to the microphone. It starts with an encounter. Moses is seeing the fire. And my guess is that he is both at the very same time frightened and compelled. Part of him is thinking, there's a bush here that's burning that's not being consumed. Maybe it's best just to turn around, right? Maybe I don't really want to know what this is about. But he can't help himself. He sees the bush and he can't leave it. And the encounter then leads to a conversation. Moses, I've heard the cry of my people, and I need you to answer it. Now, we could spend the rest of the morning on that phrase, I hear the cry of my people. There's about 8 sermons right there. That's one for us to take home and chew on again and again. I hear the cry of my people. But I'm also wondering if Moses doesn't want to say to God, and these are the parts that probably aren't put in the record for us, that Moses says something like, oh, they're crying out to you, and that would be great for you to answer it, sir. Really? They're calling you, not me. But the story betrays a very foundational truth, which is that God always chooses to work through human flesh. Throughout history, including today, yours and mine. God says, yeah, you're the one that's going. So Moses, not quite done with God, raises some good points, says, you know, I really can't speak. I'm really not a compelling personality. Oh, and by the way, in case you hadn't heard, there's an outstanding warrant for my arrest. You know, I killed that servant of Pharaoh, and the Hebrews know about it, and certainly the Egyptians would want to know who did the killing, and my name is definitely known there by both sides. And besides, even if we get over all that, who do I say is sending me? It's him saying, okay, we'll condense the story here. The argument's over. I'm going to go. But 2 things. I really would like a sign, and I would like to know whose name I can use. And God says, okay, here is the sign. After you have delivered the people, you will worship right here on this mountain. I don't know if that caught you, but did you hear that word after? After you've delivered the people, not like, I'm going to give you a sign right now. Well, the bush was pretty good. I mean, let's be honest. But what I think the truth is there is that when God calls us, it's as we're going. It's after the fact that we begin to realize the life that we're being called into. And we've got to step out before the signs start to appear. And God says, you'll know it was me. All that stuff about frogs and stuff that we'll encounter in the story later, that's going to come later. But all he has right now, all Moses has right now is a name and a promise that someday he'll be back on that mountain. Between now and then is a long journey. And all he is given is this. I am that I am. This is my name forever. For all generations. Which you figured out by now means us too. Amen. Thank you. Episcopalian saying amen. Yes. I knew I was going to like it here. It would be easy for Moses to resist God's call. You can think up about 20 reasons right now. But as we know before this story that we're told today, life is pretty good. He has married Zipporah, they have land, they have livestock. It's almost like a blue zone living, you know, that stuff we're hearing about now about people who live to be 100. I mean, they're pretty good. What else do you need? Things are going well. And I'm going to trade this for what? To risk my life that the Egyptians might remember me and put me to death? I'm going to risk this so that either side will probably, I'm sorry about that, will probably reject me. At best, they might mock me. At worst, they might kill me. And I'm going to risk all of this so that I can do the work, God, that you're probably a lot better than me doing. And the thing is, he can't not do it. He has to go because there's this encounter that is compelling him. He has encountered the sacred. He has encountered the divine. He has had a conversation with the holy. And it's this encounter which compels him. It's this encounter with the sacred that's calling him. And so he goes. He leaves all the comfortable stuff behind, and he goes. One moment, please. Sorry. Peter also has comfort on his mind. Or we could say, what a difference a week makes. You know, if you remember the reading last week, who do people say that I am? Who do you say that I am? And he says, you've got to be the anointed one. You've got to be the messianic presence. And Jesus says, yeah, God has put that in you. Peter sees and hears. And this week, Jesus goes on to say, oh, and by the way, the Son also must die and be raised. And Peter goes, hold it. No, I'm sorry. And it's kind of nice. It's like this little Southern thing that he does. I mean, I'm a Yankee, so I don't know if I can say Southern thing, but he says, let's go aside here. I'm not going to embarrass you in front of these people. You can't be saying this kind of stuff. And Jesus says, get behind me. Again, the scholars tell us it's not so much pointed at Peter. It's Jesus realizing there's a bigger thing going on here. That Jesus could just as easily say, you know, that is crazy. Why should I die? And Jesus is seeing something much more cosmic, not someone with red tails and stuff, but he's seeing something much bigger in the statement, the temptation for Jesus to have comfort himself. And he says, get behind me. I know where this leads. And so he says to Peter, and to all those, if you want to save your life, you have to lose it. You must die so that you can rise. Lose your life to find it. And Peter is really great with the messianic stuff, the healings, the feedings. Peter is seeing people whose voices have been put down in the community for generations, and Jesus is saying, listen to them. And everyone, this is messianic. All the people who have been cut off, said they were less than, not worthy of God. He's saying, they're the ones. And you. Everybody. And so Peter, it's understandable if he's seeing all this and he's saying, how far is it till we just roll right over Rome? This is what we've been told. The one who comes will just do it all. And Jesus says, no, actually, I am going to die. And frankly, you are too. You're going to have to lose your life on this journey. And so like Moses, Peter must leave what he thinks his life will be. And while he probably wants to run, he doesn't. Like Moses, he's not at all crazy about where this thing may be leading, but he cannot go anywhere else. Because it starts with an encounter. And he can't deny what he's seen. He can't walk away. I mean, he's the one who in the Gospel of John, you remember, Jesus is talking about, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you can't follow me. And we're told that half the people leave that day. And what I love about that story is that Jesus doesn't get freaked out and say, well, let's change the message so it's nicer. He turns to those who stay and say, aren't you leaving? But kind of like, maybe they're the smart ones. Maybe they understand what I'm saying. Why aren't you leaving? And Peter, once again, who we give a lot of grief to, says, well, what we don't hear again in the text is, you know, we think about it a lot, sir. But where else can we go? You're the only one who again and again has the words that speak to our soul, that hold up the people who we've heard about from Isaiah being held up. You're the only one that's giving any real truth. So yeah, we've thought about it, and we probably will think about it more. We know they will. But where else can we go? They've come close. They will leave again and again, but they will come back again and again because Peter and the followers just can't get away from the encounter with the sacred. They can't deny what they've seen. They keep having and keep being fed from the encounters. He doesn't want Jesus to die. He sure doesn't want his own life to end. And yet there's this encounter that he cannot deny. You must lose your life if you're going to find it. You know that whole phrase, you must lose your life if you're going to find it. It's not one of the catchier church phrases that we have, right? You know, like, we Episcopalians, we have those nice signs around town. The Episcopal Church welcomes you. How nice. I mean, it's good. Don't get me wrong. We shouldn't necessarily take them down, but that's a pretty easy first step. I mean, it'd be great if you guys put up a sign somewhere that said, come die with Grace Church. You know? Right? Yeah. There'll be people coming in the back door. I saw that sign. I'm here to hang on. I'm so ready. You guys. Anyway, Annie Dillard says that if we were honest, the ushers would hand out crash helmets when you walk in church. If we were honest. But you know what we are? We are honest. By the things that we say, the stories that we tell here, there's a point where Mike will get behind the table and offer the Eucharistic prayer, and then he will break that bread that we do every time we gather at the table. It's not optional. And if you look in your prayer book, after the bread is broken, it says a period of silence will be kept, not may be kept, will be kept. Because the church is saying, do you realize what you've just heard and what you have just seen? And if you come up here and take these elements, you've signed on. And you've said, I know only the things that are broken can give life. So we are honest. No one's fooling anybody here. This is what it means to be here. We must lose our life if we're going to find it. It's foundational for Moses and Peter, for Jesus, and for us. Maybe not the happiest phrase we have, but it's true. But as I think about this and I think about my own resistance, I find myself asking, so what does that look like? What does it look like to lose our life? And I don't have time, and we don't have time for all of us to go around and say a lot of things about where you've encountered this, where you've had experiences of this, but I want to say just a couple things today. The first is a warning about what it isn't. Because I want to say God knows, and that may sound like you're not supposed to say this, but God does know that the church has used this phrase way too long in bad ways, in cruel ways, in life-taking ways. There's a whole lot of bad religion that kind of understands that what this means is that we get to keep our life at your expense. One group over another. And I'll tell you what, I never fail to be impressed with how as a species we find ways to separate ourselves. Particularly in the name of religion. The phrase here in this bad religion is, you must lose your life so that I can keep my place and power. It's what women have had to deal with since the beginning of time for men. God told me that you must lose your place and status because, after all, you know who we are. It's what people of color in this country have heard since our origins and continue to hear. We see it in religious leadership, kind of giving this aura that kind of, you know, we really do know here, and you shouldn't question us. I'm sure glad anytime I've had this stolen, I've never thought that. Thank you for the collar. It's a great temptation. Becky, my wife, and I recently watched the PBS series Jamestown, probably historical fiction. Take both those words to heart. But it's truth, and it's set in 1619, a year we should mark indelibly on our souls as people who live on this land. And in essence, what the series is portraying, betraying, with God on our side, we can push out all the indigenous people and kill them when we need to, so that we have a place and we have power and our life is protected. We can enslave and kill Africans so that we still continue to have our place and our power. Neither of those stains has left us. They're still active. We have all the statistics that tell us that. All of this to create God's new world is what the series, you keep hearing these people. We are here to create God's new world. They must lose their life so that we get to protect ours. And it's with us today, particularly as a white guy. I got to fight that one. Because too often I won't believe that losing my life will actually help me find it. Now again, what losing our life doesn't mean is degrading others so that we get to keep our place and power. It doesn't mean degrading myself in some crazy, sick, religious way. Degradation is never part of God's plan. Jesus says, I may choose to lay down my life, but nobody's going to take it. You hear that? That's about dignity and inherent integrity. We may choose to lie, but if someone comes and says, you must give your life up for me, no, that's a huge smell test. That's what it isn't. So what is it? There's a lot of things it is. You have your stories. You've had your encounters. That's why you're here. Somewhere you have bought into this truth, despite yourself. That coming and gathering somehow, we learn this again and again. A couple of things I do think it means, I know at least for me, probably for you, if I may be so bold, it typically means losing something comfortable. It typically means losing some things that have made me feel secure, maybe even things that served well in the past, one way or another. But it typically is about stuff like beliefs and patterns of living and the way I approach the world and see the world that I need to die to if something is going to be rebirthed. And it typically makes me very uncomfortable. We have this word vulnerability that we have and use a lot, and people like Brené Brown are giving to us, and it's a huge word and it's an important word. And I'm wondering also at times if it comes too easy. Like this is like vulnerability on steroids. You know, losing your life isn't like stubbing a toe. It's like feeling your limbs about to be pulled apart. Because you think everything about me is about to go. Paul Tillich says, it will shake our foundations. And it shakes us because it's calling us beyond ourselves. It's calling us beyond what we in our own thinking can manufacture. It's calling us beyond what we can script or imagine that will make us safe. And if it were comfortable, it wouldn't be about losing. And that is why losing must start with an encounter. So that we don't get into all the crazy definitions of what losing means. It must start with the encounter we find in one another. The encounter we find in each other's stories. I have a bunch of trinkets that I've collected over the years. One moment, please. Thank you. There are all kinds of things. When I was working, I at least had about half of them in my office, so Becky didn't have to deal with them strung around the house. But they're trinkets of encounter. They're trinkets of places, kind of like the old Hebrew tabernacle. Like, this is where something significant happened. And some of them are a bit more obvious. There's a rosary that sits on my nightstand. There's also a troll, you know, those old plastic dolls with the big hair coming out of the top. Someone gave me, when I was in a parish in another state, and a family gave me that. It's dressed in a black alb with a white collar and a cross on it. How cool. But it was their way of saying, we've had an encounter. And we laughed. There's a Yoda doll. One of my favorites is a push-in cigarette lighter. It's from a van from a church I served a long time ago. And when the church was getting ready to sell the van, I remember thinking about, that's been a place of some significant encounter. And I need a piece of it. And I was trying to think, what could I take that wouldn't devalue the van? or get me in trouble with the leadership. So I went out. I literally went out. I went thinking, no, not a windshield wiper. That's not a good idea. Not a hubcap. No. And I was looking around, and as I was looking inside the van, I saw this. The push-in lighter hadn't worked for years. It shorted out. The wiring was all gone. I thought, this won't devalue it. No one's going to miss this. And it sits on my desk at home. And I see it regularly. Because it reminds me of encounter. And not only does it remind me, I put them around so that hopefully they will remind me when I'm not wanting the next encounter. When I'm thinking, no, God, this is a bridge too far. This is a step too far. I'm kind of comfortable now. I mean, heck, I'm retired. How comfortable can you get? And those things serve as reminders to say, not only did you get to see and taste and talk to the sacred through the people you were with and the moments you encountered, but don't think that they've stopped. We Episcopalians love our trinkets. We got stuff around all over the place. We got windows. We got crosses. We love our stuff. And hopefully they continue to serve and remind us of the encounters, of the stories, of where we have seen burning bushes that didn't get consumed. We have our liturgies, where you are the human trinkets. You are the stories, the places of encounter, the ones we've shared together, the ones we've heard from each other. You're the trinkets. And we hear the texts, the stories, like today, of the people who've gone before us that say, it's crazy out there, but it's the only place we keep finding life. So take the chance. Lose your life. Do it together. Do it based on some stories that are about dignity and see what will get birthed in you. It's why you keep coming here. You got a lot of other things you could do. You know, when we were driving in today, there's a whole lot of people sitting at restaurants reading the paper. Stuff you could be doing this morning, but you're here. Because you can't stay away. Because it's here that you find the stories. I was talking with a friend in town who was asking me if I still went to church as I was retired. Fair question. I said, are you kidding me? I can't live without it. Because I love comfort. But what we get here is encounter with something deeper and bigger than ourselves. What we get here is encounter with burning bushes that aren't consumed, and we have to meditate on that. What we get here is being in spaces where we find that more people doesn't mean less for us, but it means more. We have encounters with I am who I am. Encounters with the one who says, this is my name, and it is my name for all generations. So why would we lose our life? Well, it starts with an encounter with I am. And we have the encounter, and we go from there. Amen.